Hello, I'm Lina Akhmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Sudan's humanitarian crisis is rapidly escalating. For the last 16 months, Sudanese civilians have faced indiscriminate attacks, forcing over 10 million people to flee their homes and creating the world's largest displacement crisis. With at least 750,000 people on the brink of starvation, NGOs warn that a disaster on a scale not seen in decades is imminent. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification says Sudan is facing the worst levels of hunger ever recorded in the country, as well as the world's largest internally displaced crisis. There has been a significant influx of displaced people as conflict spreads to the town of Sinjar, the capital of Sennar state. Observers say the displacement in Sennar is happening as the rainy season begins, and the poor living and sanitation conditions at IDP camps could lead to disease outbreaks. For more insight, I spoke with Simbongani Kayola, Sudan Country Director for Mercy Corps, an international humanitarian organization that aims to help people build secure, productive, and just communities. Take a listen.
I just returned from a trip to eastern Sudan, mainly Kassala and Gadarif states. The conflict in Sennar state erupted on the 26th of June when armed clashes began between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces in Jebel Moya in Sennar state. In the last 1 month, we've seen that conflict has spread to multiple localities within Sennar state, including Sinjar, Adindar, and other localities, and it has led to large-scale displacement. From the displacement tracking matrix, we've seen that over 136,000 people have been displaced from various locations across Sennar state. And the direction of the displacement, most people are moving east towards the neighboring state of Gadarif. Others are fleeing onwards to Kassala, Red Sea, and others going to River Nile and the Blue and White Nile states. These large movements are really having a heavy impact on the receiving states. The influx of people is straining local resources and infrastructure in the neighboring states that are receiving these displaced people. There are concerns about the poor living conditions and potential disease outbreaks in the sites that are hosting the displaced populations. Especially with the start of the rainy season, which we are currently starting, the risk of waterborne and vector-borne diseases increases. There is a lack of basic water and sanitation facilities, and no running water or ablution facilities means a high risk of waterborne diseases.
Given the situation that you described, what are the primary obstacles in providing humanitarian aid, the work that Mercy Corps is doing on the ground? Talk to us about that and some of the challenges that you have come across.
The biggest challenge at the moment is the ongoing conflict and insecurity. The fighting continues to affect various regions of the country, including Sennar state, which we just talked about, but also multiple states in the Darfur region, as well as the Kordofan. This means that key supply routes have been cut off due to the fighting. So, for example, the route from Port Sudan to Kosti, which cuts through Sennar state, is currently inaccessible. And this route has been a lifeline for delivery of assistance to thousands of people in Sudan. But now with the expansion of the fighting, it means that that route is no longer usable. Additional challenges are border closures and the weather conditions. So the Adre crossing from Chad is closed. And then the Chad to Darfur crossing via Tine in North Darfur is inaccessible or rapidly becoming inaccessible due to the heavy rains and flooding brought about by the rainy season. Finally, despite some recent improvements in visa approvals and travel permits for humanitarians, we still continue to see a challenge from bureaucratic and administrative processes. They continue to slow the pace of aid operations.
So how is Mercy Corps adapting its assistance strategies, given the growing number of displaced people, but also the challenges in delivering aid?
Well, our work at Mercy Corps is focused on providing immediate assistance to displaced communities, particularly through multi-purpose cash assistance. Cash assistance allows families to address a wide range of needs whilst also helping to support the viability of local markets in the face of the ongoing conflict. And with multi-purpose cash assistance, we can deliver the assistance by working in partnerships with financial service providers in the local markets. So we're able to deliver assistance quite rapidly and don't have to face some of the challenges associated with roadblocks and so on. We are also working with private sector companies to enhance access to agricultural inputs and financial services for farmers. So working with entities who are already present in the localities that we're targeting to be able to deliver assistance via the local market system.
And you met with women in Gedere. What were some of the issues or challenges and hopes that they shared with you?
For many of the women that I met in Gedare, this conflict has presented several challenges. Currently meeting them in Gedare, that is the second or third instance of displacement for many of them. Some of them previously fled from Khartoum to Al Jazeera, and then from Jazeera fled to Gedare. Others fled to Sennar and then have had to flee again. The displaced women report fleeing without any belongings and a significant inability to meet basic needs, primarily because they have no income. They urgently require assistance. They have concerns including shelter, food security, and for many of them, the preferred modality of assistance is cash assistance. So in a rapid needs assessment that was conducted by some of our partners, 84% of the respondents reported a preference for cash because it gives them the flexibility to spend on what they need, but also the ability to move on to other safer locations as well.
What would you say were some of the main takeaways for you?
With each passing day, Lenore, the lives of the Sudanese people are getting worse. The humanitarian situation is really worsening. And as we were on this journey, we could see people using any available means of transport that they could find, sitting on top of a vehicle, for example, where a human being is supposed to be sitting. And with each passing day, we continue to see more and more people leaving and seeking to find safety. So what we need is an end to this conflict, and what we need is diplomatic support to bring this conflict to an end.
Simongani, is there anything that the world does not understand, the world needs to know?
The crisis in Sudan is one of the largest crises that the world has seen over the last few years. 50% of the Sudanese population is in need of humanitarian assistance, so that's approximately 25 million people. 755,000 people are at risk of starvation in the next few months, and we need more attention to this crisis. We need the work of humanitarians to be facilitated. We need more funding as well to reach more people with the assistance that they need.
Simongani Kayola, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Next door in South Sudan, some internally displaced persons in Malakal town there are no service in their new location. The IDPs say they lack food, clean water, and medical services. Mamer Abraham quote reports for VOA from Malakal.
Thousands of internally displaced persons or IDPs in Malakal town say they need help. 35-year-old Nyanbol Them, a mother of five children, says most of the families in the IDP camp inside Malakal town face many challenges.
Rain falls on us and we are beaten by mosquitoes. We are living in a school and there is open defecation. Flies cause diarrhea and vomiting. Mosquitoes are also a challenge, as you see. We do not have mosquito nets and we don't have house. Mosquito bites and lack of food are affecting the elderly. If there are aid organizations, they should help us.
Them says some women collect firewood for sale in order to feed their families. 35-year-old Nyan Nyok Dul, a mother of three, says her children are missing classes in the camp.
Children were studying in the camp we came from. Even when we left, they were registered, but now some children are in school and other children are not in school. We pay money for a child to be registered. If there is no money, a child remains at home.
The first deputy speaker of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, Nathaniel Oyet-Pierino, said Wednesday that the August House has summoned 10 national ministers to appear in Parliament on Wednesday next week to answer questions related to hunger across the country. Zakaria Yarlul, chairperson of the IDP camp, says medical workers allegedly asked them to carry 6 persons to the hospitals.
We do not have any property, we do not have food, we do not have land, and we do not have shelters. Can't we be assisted? We should be helped, so that if these children survive, they may be the future of this country, and the elderly should not die of hunger. Yet South Sudan has become an independent nation. The government has not come back to us, and no aid agency is responsible for us. We are neglected.
VOA could not independently verify Lul's accounts of the situation of IDPs in Malakal. Peter Pal, acting chairperson of South Sudan's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Upper Nile State, says he will send a team to assess the camp. For VOA News, I am Amira Bramcourt, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
Chad recently eliminated the tropical disease, human African trypanosomiasis, known as HAT, according to the World Health Organization. The elimination marks a milestone for the agency's program, which targets what it calls neglected tropical diseases. Dr. Amesh Adalja, an infectious disease physician with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that the fly-borne tropical disease is also known as sleeping sickness.
Chad was able to eliminate human African trypanosomiasis by an aggressive effort at really trying to reduce contact between humans and the vector insect that spreads this disease. That's the tsetse fly. So that involves aggressive use of traps, aggressive education of the public, as well as surveillance and testing to confirm that elimination had occurred.
And how is HAT spread to people? You say it's through this tsetse fly?
Yes. Human African trypanosomiasis is acquired by humans through the bite of a tsetse fly. And during that bite, tsetse flies that are infected with a microorganism called Trypanosoma brucei will then transmit that parasite into humans, and that's how they acquire it. So it's being bitten by a tsetse fly that has the requisite pathogen in it, the trypanosome.
Is there a vaccine for this disease?
There are no vaccines for human African trypanosomiasis.
So that's why it's been hard to eliminate all this time.
It's hard to eliminate because there is no vaccine, and also because this is involving another species, basically the tsetse fly vector, which you have to really diminish its numbers or diminish contact between humans and the tsetse flies to do that. So that's a very hard thing to do versus, you know, the eradication of smallpox, where there is no animal vector. It's just humans you're dealing with. Here you're dealing with humans and you're dealing with tsetse flies.
The WHO has been targeting this disease for a while there. And Chad, how was Chad able to, did they rely on WHO to do the work, or how did that work with the government and WHO? Did they work together to eliminate it?
The WHO has had a program to deal with neglected tropical diseases where they provide technical support, resources, meetings. So that's all part of it. And Chad isn't the first country in Africa to eliminate human African trypanosomiasis. So there are best practices that can be shared from other places that have had success at eliminating the disease as well.
And you mentioned that other countries have had success. What are the other African nations that have eliminated the disease?
So in addition to Chad, there have been several other countries in Africa that have eliminated human African trypanosomiasis, and these include Benin, the Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea, Ghana, Rwanda, and Togo.
And they, I guess, followed the same kind of protocols for getting rid of it.
Yeah, the key thing to elimination is making sure that you're reducing contact between humans and the vector, the tsetse fly. So there are ways to do that with trapping and certain strategies of how you use traps and targets for these tsetse flies to be attracted to and then be trapped. But this kind of general roadmap, I think, is pretty well established now that we have multiple countries doing it. But obviously, there's probably more room for innovation here. And I think better vaccines, better treatments for human African trypanosomiasis would also be part of what we want to do as well.
That is Dr. Amesh Adalja, an infectious disease physician with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam from New York. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Artificial intelligence, or AI, is rapidly becoming prevalent across various sectors in Ghana, including healthcare, where young innovators are using AI to develop cutting-edge solutions. Reporter Isaac Kalezi brings us this story from Accra.
Mino Health AI Labs, a tech group led by young innovators, is pioneering the use of artificial intelligence, or AI, in healthcare. They have developed an AI tool that quickly and accurately diagnoses ailments, helping to address the shortage of healthcare workers in the country. Health workers at this diagnostic center in Koforidua, a town in Ghana's eastern region, are busy examining scanned X-ray images of patients. They are assisted by generative AI, a tool designed with artificial intelligence that quickly detects and diagnoses various ailments by analyzing the uploaded scanned images. The platform can generate a medical report, prescribe medication, and recommend treatment procedures, easing the workload of radiologists like Daniel Jima.
One key thing that I love about the AI is the fact that you are able to ask follow-up questions even when you have asked your first question.
Jima is also impressed with the tool's ability to analyze two different images and provide a diagnosis all at the same time.
The platform is able to differentiate between the fact that you have two images put side by side, the left one is this, the right one is this, and give a comprehensive information about it. That's a fantastic thing about AI that I really love as well.
Darlington Akogo is the brain behind this AI tool. His team at Mino Health AI Labs first developed it 2 years ago, but revamped it this year to make it more efficient. Ghana has more than 90 radiologists, serving a population of over 30 million, according to the Ghana Association of Radiologists. With the shortage of health workers in many hospitals in Ghana, Akogo wants his AI tool to fill the gaps.
The goal is that we want everyone to get access to quality healthcare, regardless of where they are. So let's empower our health workers by leveraging the AI solutions that we've built.
According to the World Health Organization, non-communicable diseases account for 43% of mortality in Ghana, and the need for an early diagnosis and treatment is vital. But many health facilities have not yet fully embraced the technology because a huge number of health workers and patients are still skeptical. Jima himself has been a skeptic all these years. So his facility has put a system in place to ensure quality assurance that provides a safety net for AI-assisted diagnosis. All diagnostic reports generated by the AI tool are always reviewed by a certified medical doctor.
I was a bit skeptical about having to use AI to diagnose people's conditions. Whatever the AI tells us, we don't just run with it. And in most cases, we realize that they tally. When they don't tally, of course, the human diagnosis overrides the AI, and that's what we do. Yeah.
Akogo's technology has been certified by Ghana's Food and Drugs Authority, but he's aware of concerns about AI and the dangers associated with it potentially diagnosing patients wrongly. He says clinicians are also aware of his tool's limitations and are encouraged to always ensure that doctors have the final say on AI diagnostic reports.
Right, so if you have like complex MRI of the brain and you want to pick up something like a stroke, it cannot. So we let you know that it cannot do that. So to address those dangers is finding the limitations of the AI system and making it clear to clinicians. And also there's a safeguard method that we apply, which is that don't let the AI system have the final say. Always let a clinician have the final say.
For now, thanks to the power of technology and its promising results, patients continue to visit facilities like this one, knowing they will receive accurate and fast diagnosis of their ailments so they can start their treatment without delay. Isaac Kalaji, VOA Africa, Accra, Ghana.
Mental health illness is on the rise among women in Zambia, becoming a leading cause of suicide among women there. VOA's Daniel Tonga reports from the capital, Lusaka.
Increasing incidents of suicide among women in Zambia have become a major concern for health providers in the country, such as Dr. Francisca Walia, a psychologist at the Chinama Hills Mental Hospital, who sees the rise in female suicides linked to untreated mental health disorders.
Suicide has a mental health aspect to it, because when we talk about our mental well-being, it looks at the areas of how someone thinks, how they act, right, and how they feel. So when we talk of someone who's presented with suicidal ideations, one thing that we'll appreciate is that the type of thoughts that they're having are definitely not positive. They're quite negative. Then how are they feeling at that point? They're definitely not having any positive feelings. They're hopeless. They feel like giving up.
Dr. Edwin Mumba, one of the most vocal advocates for mental health, states that psychosocial problems often lead women to perceive themselves as failures in life. This sense of failure creates mental problems, fostering feelings of hopelessness that culminate in suicide.
Psychosocial problems are the ones that are driving women to commit suicide. So it could be a social pressure. You find that maybe at a certain age, your friends or your peers have attained certain things. Could be marriage, could be houses, could be having children as well. So you find that a person who's not having those things might think as if they're actually failure in life and they might try to take their own life.
According to Zambia's Chinama Hills Mental Hospital, the facility receives and treats an average of 16,200 mental health cases each year. One of these cases is in Chimunya Mulea, a woman who attempted to take her own life and attributes her suicidal ideation to her mental illness.
Well, I was diagnosed with psychotic depression, so that means I see things that are not there. When I don't take my medicine, I take antipsychotics, which is called risperidone. So if I don't take that medicine, I'm going to see things that are not there. I have auditory and visual hallucinations. So when those things are going on, it's like people are having conversations in my head telling me like, okay, you're not worth it. You just end your life. You know, your parents can have another kid. It's not like it's the end of the world for them. You know, the world will still go on even if you end it right now. So that's what's going on in my head. And fighting those thoughts is really hard. Unless I take the medicine that silences the voices, or I self-harm, that will make me feel better.
Dr. Yasmin Muchindu, psychologist at the University of Lusaka, believes the solution to mental illness and suicide in women lies in taking care of their mental health needs.
Suicide is a global problem, not just amongst women, but men too. And the way we can prevent it is by according it the importance it deserves in the lives of modern individuals, male or female, and more especially females. It's by actually paying attention to mental health needs of a woman.
Mr. Kennedy Mtale, psychologist at Decisive Minds, agrees.
We are human beings and we are social animals. So one of the most important things is human beings, they need to seek support. So whenever there is a challenge, in case someone has a problem, the first, you know, support should come from the family. The family is a very important, you know, system that will be able to help women. But apart from that, we also need to empower women, you know. We empower women, economic empowerment.
Mental health experts say mental illness is a growing health crisis, with the biggest challenge being avoidance, stigma, and lack of right policies to deal with it. They suggest raising awareness about mental illness will help reduce rates of suicide by death in women. Daniel Tonga, VOA News, Lusaka.
Abortion is restricted in Kenya, but in Kilifi County on the southern coast, many women and girls with unplanned pregnancies say they have no choice but to undergo dangerous abortions without the intervention of a nurse or doctor. Local activists say the practice is contributing to high maternal mortality in the region. Reporter Halima Gongo has this story.
Masi Katana says she became pregnant when she was still in secondary school. She says her boyfriend refused to support her and her parents refused to accept her, so she had no other option except to undergo an abortion without the help of a medical expert. Katana says her parents are strict, so she traveled to Mombasa and made a concoction of local herbs. It induced bleeding, followed by a discharge, but the abortion failed, so she had to go to the hospital. Health practitioners like Monakarama Athman Mohammed say Masi is lucky. Not all women who perform unsafe abortion make it to the hospital.
And you get somebody, maybe the uterus has rotten, gets a condition called septicemia. Septicemia is a very severe state of the sepsis, and most of the time when it goes to the bloodstream, it has to go all through the body, even to the brain. Now we get mortality.
Abortion is illegal in Kenya unless the mother's health is in danger. But doctors estimate that nearly 500,000 abortions each year take place in Kenya, the majority of them unsafe. Leila Abdul Khair Isaac is the chief executive officer at the Youth Voices in Action Initiative, a women's reproductive health advocacy group. She says there are too many stories like Katana's and says the group wants to help young women dealing with unplanned pregnancies to make better decisions.
Women and girls, most of them, they don't have information on reproductive health. We also provide information on the abortion complications, the post-abortion care, and the issues of the patient's rights, like their rights in terms of them to access reproductive health services.
The group trained skilled hair braider Emily Nasubo to talk to clients about reproductive health. She says the heartbreaking stories of women and girls going through painful abortions motivated her to support the initiative.
The program inasaidia kuelimisha watoto.
Nasubo says the program helps educate girls and women and develops them intellectually. They learn self-awareness and self-care strategies, and when they're in doubt, they come back for support and guidance. In the past 6 months, Kilifi County Referral Hospital recorded at least 500 cases of post-abortion treatment. Kennedy Miriti coordinates the hospital's reproductive health program. He says the death rate among pregnant women in Kenya is very high.
We are also exploring on what are these causes of maternal mortalities that we have not identified that are causing all those mortalities out there. And definitely abortion is one of them.
Doctors estimate that roughly 7 women and girls die every day in Kenya due to unsafe abortion, and thousands more are hospitalized. Halima Gongo, VOA News, Kilifi County, Kenya.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Enoch Mudu, in Washington, with producer David Vandy. Until next time, take care, stay well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.